Well, hi, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs, and welcome to our 10:30 in the morning show on January 25th, 2022. It's a pleasure to have you here today, and maybe it's not today. Maybe you're listening on the archives, and we do archive everything over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. We're the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, and I hope you go over there and check out all the things we do. All of our podcasts are over there. You can listen to all of them. They're all archived. Our magazine, Equity and Access, a wonderful online journal, is over there. You can flip through that, read some great articles, go back into the archives, etc. You can link over to our SEL site, which is SEL Today, Social Emotional Learning, seltoday.org. Okay, it's all over there, plus a ton of other information, ace-ed.org. Go over there, check it out. We'd love to have you do that. We're going to have a fun show right now. I've got Daniel Tobias Flint here. Mr. Flint is a U.S. history teacher like I was, and he is the Social Studies Department Chair over at Westside High up near Jacksonville in Duval County Public Schools. I do know how to pronounce that, in Florida, okay? And this show was given to me by Steve Wakefield over at the Discovery, my good friends. And Daniel is going to talk. Hi, Daniel. It's Larry here. How you doing? I don't mean to leave you hanging there. How you doing?
All right, it's Duval, but that's okay. Hey, Larry, how you doing? I'm just excited and thrilled to be here and be able to spread the word about what we're doing down here.
I can't wait. All right, Duval County. What did I say?
Duval, but it's Duval.
Duval. Thank you. Okay, Duval. Duval. Is that good? Duval. Right,
County. That's close enough.
Close enough. All right, I'm from Philly originally. I live in Maine. Give me a break. It's winter up here. All right, and beautiful.
Well, I was born and raised in upstate New York, so.
There you go. Where? Congratulations to having a great team like the Bills, and I'm sorry they lost. We'll move on, okay?
Oh, I'm a Giants fan. I can't help
there you go.
That,
even worse. Even worse. I'm from Philly, so that's terrible.
I'm not a Jets fan, so it's okay.
Okay.
No, I was actually born in a little town south of Albany called Chatham, New York, in Columbia County.
Oh,
I did.
Nice.
I graduated from Chatham High School. I did my undergrad at Hudson Valley Community College, and I graduated from Union College, the same school my father graduated from in Schenectady, New York. So,
nice. That's a good story. I like that. And what you're doing down there fascinates me. Being an old history teacher. Okay, I love this. All right, the digital Discovery, I have to put this in perspective for everybody. Discovery has a lot of digital resources, okay? They have movies, videos, all this kind of stuff you can use on your computer, et cetera. We're going to talk about it. All the digital resources in the world, okay? And D-Day, okay? We all know D, that's what we're going to focus on today, even though that's June 6th, all right? 1944, I might add, all right? So Daniel has been using the digital resources, but he's been using other resources as well. And I just want to get into this right now. Remember, we're talking about D-Day, and I'll tell you an amazing story in a second. I don't know if you're a member of or you're using them. Talk to me. You use the Round Canopy parachuting team. I want to hear this. Just speak, Daniel. Mr. Flint.
So,
okay, over at Westside High School. Tell me this story. Yeah. Go ahead.
So not only do I use the Round Canopy Parachute Team USA, I'm also the team's historian, proud member, proud team member. I've got 5 Round Canopy jumps underneath me, and it is the premier jump organization. If you ever – hey, you know what, Larry, if you ever wanted to get your knees in the breeze with us, you can come on down to Putnam County in Palatka, and we'll get you in the air. But
right.
I'll tell you what,
the knees in the breeze. I love it. I love it. The knees in the breeze.
It's always more than a jump with us. So absolutely.
God,
you know, it is a great organization. It is veteran run, but it's not just for veterans only. It's meant for civilians like myself can sit there and jump with the team. We host two training events in a year. We have Operation Black Hat in the fall and Operation Sand Snake in the spring. The fall event honors our fallen Vietnam veterans and our Vietnam veterans from, and because as you know, when our Vietnam vets, they came home, they weren't exactly treated the greatest. So we really want to have
times.
Build that camaraderie.
They were different times. Yep.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
terrible.
I really relish the fact I can sit there with our Vietnam veterans. You know, we have great friends with the Friends of Army Aviation, our sponsors. We could not do what we do without Art Schaefer and Scott I. Palaka. You know, he is the reason why we can jump where we do, you know, and because we're able to do these things, you know, and we bring the veterans in and they're able to sit there and jump with us. Even if they don't jump with us, they can sit there and, you know, talk to the veterans that are there or civilians like myself that want to hear their story. And it is great. You know, you're surrounded by living history everywhere you go. And,
yep.
You know, we have all, you know, it's not overload to say, but as I'm talking to our veterans that come in and we get
it's
more people
overload.
All the time, you know, being a history buff like yourself, you know, I'm always sitting there taking more information, more messages, and they just come in, and it's a whole, you know, new experience for them. It's a, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but there are 22 veteran suicides a day, and part of the reason
I know there are a lot,
one
a year is too much. Okay, it's terrible.
Oh,
it's a terrible epidemic. Yeah, one a decade
and
is
part
too
of,
much. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Oh yeah, and you know, COVID has not helped the veteran community at all either. So we still host these events. The veterans come in. We talk to them. You know, we're partnered with amazing organizations and companies like Grunt Style. Firehouse Subs just partnered up with us.
Oh,
22
really?
Sierra, other veteran-owned companies. Oh, yeah. We are one of the big things as an educator was we were always trained, and my former boss, you know, Principal Kenneth, he's an executive director now, Kenneth Reddick, always told me, in order to really drive instruction home in your community, you have to build those solid community relations, either with nonprofits or corporations. And thankfully for us, Firehouse Subs is located right here in beautiful Jacksonville, Florida. And, you know, I get to sit there, and their CEO, Don Fox, has been a huge benefactor to us, as well as, you know, Tim Jensen at Grunt Style. What a great organization. They come in. They do so much for us, along with Horse Soldier Bourbon and so many other great entities that help us out. But when you come down and jump with us, we want to sit there and make you understand that it's more than just a jump. We put you in the air. We kind of go through the training with you at our two annual training events. Like I said, in the fall, it's all Vietnam. In the springtime, it's all World War II. So when you go through our jump school, it's a 4-day program. It starts on Tuesday and ends on Friday. You go through the same training that the U.S. Army would put their guys through, the 82nd and the 101st through, and you kind of get a crash course in how to jump. And it is I don't say crash course in a negative way. It is
Sorry,
well,
bad use of words.
Bad
use of words.
Well,
yeah.
The training that we receive is absolutely like second to none. You got to understand, you know, these men have been descending from the air since 1945. Okay, since D-Day 44.
Well, I got news. I'll tell you a story here. My father-in-law, who's deceased now, okay, jumped in behind enemy lines before D-Day. Okay.
Oh, wow.
He did. And they landed. This was interesting. They landed with, I don't know the whole story because he didn't like to talk about it a lot. But he told me one thing, that they had landed at one point behind enemy lines in France, jumped in, okay, with gasoline on their backs, or, you know, with a tank of gasoline that they could put on their backs, and crawled at night to try to blow up the Nazi submarine pens, I think in Le Havre.
Oh, wow.
France. Yeah, it's an amazing story. And, of course, he's passed away now. But I shouldn't say, of course, but he would be very, very old if he hadn't. And but he did jump in. He did jump. He's a World War II vet who was wounded. And, well, those stories are just amazing. And he jumped in prior to D-Day and worked his way the other way. Okay, you know, towards the shore as opposed to in from the shore. It's astounding stuff. And let me ask you this, okay? You're talking about all the stuff with the parachute, and I think it's great, okay? And you must that must really get the kids going in your class. How do you bring that in? But put the two things. How do you bring that into your class? And the way you're telling me right now, I get it, but I want you to articulate that. Bring it into your classroom.
So. You know, about a year and a half ago, as an engineer, we have pre-planning in the summertime. Then you get your list of, you know, things that the mandated trainings that you got to attend.
Yeah.
And as department chair, I had to make sure, you know, I'm sitting here looking at what training haven't I attended over the past couple of years, because they usually tend to kind of be redundant a little bit over the years. And I was like, oh, D-Day. I was like, I love military history. I was like, you know, my great uncle was a combat medic. My grandfather served in NAR Japan during the war. My great aunt was a Wave. My other great uncle was a pilot for the Army Air Corps during the war. So I mean, you know, I just like I love everything
it's
World
there.
War II.
Yeah.
And I just like, all right, I'm going to go to this D-Day thing and see what it's all about. So we're getting ready for the thing to start. Then all of a sudden, like, six or seven guys from the back of our media center just come out, and they jumped out of the C-47. They were just right in the door, and they just came out. And all of a sudden, they're in the M-42 uniforms, full gear, and it was just I was hooked from the minute. And my first thought was,
it does it.
I need to do this. I need to do this. And I need to do this with my students so they could see this. And that's when I started taking notes. And, you know, the content was fabulous. The guys were so great. And, you know, all veterans, and, you know, they're using their military experience to explain, you know, what the experience with the guys on D-Day was like, you know, what they went through and they endured.
Yeah.
And I was hooked from the minute, from the first minute they walked, I saw them in the uniforms, like, I'm not going to lie, I wanted the uniform. I really did. I wanted to have my own. I'm not going to lie about that.
Uniform envy. Of course. And actually, you bring up a good point, because when students, high school students in particular, see this, okay, they are very impressed by it. It's easy to say one thing, okay, and just learn about it. But when you see when it's someone in the flesh in a uniform who has done these things, there is a certain pride in that and a certain heightened interest. I really love this. Keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just think it's really important. Yeah.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah. So when I saw them, they had us scheduling our Phil Little, our social sciences coordinator. They had a sign-up sheet. All right, bring this to your school. I was like, oh, absolutely, I want to bring this to my school. So I signed up. I had them come out, and I had them do a presentation in you know, the spring of 2019. This is, you know, before all the other stuff started. And the presentation went great. I actually created a World War II project for my kids, a genealogy project, because I do genealogy on the side for my family. And I had five students that researched their World War II, you know, patriot ancestor, and they brought that information to the presentation, and we put them up front, and they got to share their stories, not only with the RCPT's veterans at the time, because I wasn't a team member yet, but they got to share it with everybody in a major, major way, and it was really gratifying to see, because Jacksonville's a military town. We've got NAS Jack,
right.
NAS Mayport.
Right.
The majority, the community that I teach in, the majority of my students come from military families.
Yep.
So when they see this coming through, there's a plethora of resources coming into the classroom. And when they see, oh, my God, there's a teacher there that understands and they want to bring this in, you know, the parents love it. The community loves it. My bosses love it. You know, it's just it's all about student engagement. And you got to keep the kids' attention, because I gotta beat the video game, and I got to beat Instagram and Snap and whatever else they're, you know, got their heads into. But when their heads go down, I tell you what, I replaced one device with another. I replaced their phones with my district laptop. If they're going to be on a device, they're going to be on my computer doing my digital program. That's where Discovery Ed is going to come into play in a minute, and I'll get into that in a second.
Take your time.
So after they did our – oh, yeah. So, no, after they did their spring presentation, I talked to one of the jumpers. You know, I was like, how – you know, his name was Kevin Kroll. I was like, Kevin, how can I do this? And he's like, it's easy. Just come down and, you know, register for one of our events and do the jump school, and you can do it. And I was like,
wow,
is that easy? I was like, I don't have to have any, you know, any, like, and he's like, no, just sign up and come down. We take care of the rest. And they did. And it was just, you know, I'm not going to lie, I was like, the first day we do all the training, and there's classroom too. You actually go to, it's not just, you're learning, it's not like they just push you out of the airplane and that's it. No, you go through thorough education and a thorough school. You know, our safety and training officer, Rick Randall, really, I mean, no punches are pulled. Every precaution is taken, you know, down to the slightest detail. And they go over the nomenclature of the parachute, the gear, you know, from your reserve to your mains to everything that you are going to have to do. They go through all the potential types of landings that you can encounter. We have swing trainers that sit there. We actually can put you inside of a training harness and mirror what it'd be like to sit there in the sky, so you can sit there and learn how to navigate the chute. So the difference between World War II and the chutes we use today, we have what are called steerable canopies. We have toggles on our chutes that we can actually turn the chute in the air, and we can steer ourselves to a specific landing spot. The chutes they had in World War II, they did not have this feature. So yeah. It's just you're coming out of the sky and you hope to God that you land somewhere, you know. So
literally and, you hope to God you land somewhere safe. Yeah, boy.
Yeah, you know, and there, yeah. And you know, during the war, there, were, you know, during the invasion, there were misdrops all over the place.
Oh,
so
terrible.
It was just, you know, and well, the other factor was when our GIs were, when our paratroopers were coming down, the Nazis had strung concertina wire up all over the place. So you know, and Rommel had flooded all the Normandy rivers. He flooded the Normandy River. So our jumpers, when they came down, they a lot of them drowned. You know, and it was just awful, awful stuff. But you know. Again,
well, I have to ask,
Rangers,
you just brought up something, Daniel. You know more than me. Was Rommel up there during the Normandy invasion? Because he's known for his North Africa campaigns. Was Rommel in fact up there?
So Rommel was actually placed in charge of the Atlantic Wall, and he got actually Normandy prior to Rommel's taking command was actually a pretty cherry kind of posting to get. You know, it was a very relaxing place. If you look, I've read the journals of people like Hans Gockel. They were the German soldiers that were stationed at Normandy, the Normandy defenses. When Rommel got there, he was really unimpressed with the defenses that were set up, but he had an epiphany when he got there. Rommel saw what all the other German high command didn't see. Rommel saw that the gradient of the beachhead reminded him of another invasion site the Allies had taken. It was Salerno. So when we invaded Italy in 43, you know, Rommel saw that. It's like, okay, so he created the Atlantic Wall, the massive defense systems. You know, when you hit the beachhead, it starts at about 800 feet out, you know, and you look at, 800 yards out, and it's nothing but beachhead. The minute our guys hit the beachhead at 0600, it's like it's a shrinking landmass. So, you know, every second they're on the beachhead, the beachhead is shrinking, and they've got to get to the sand wall, and they've got to get up there, and they've got to, you know, ascend the cliffs and everything else to sit there and take their objectives and take out the gun emplacements so all the equipment can get on the beachhead and get up. You know, and our pathfinders and our paratroopers, their job the night before was to jump in and take out all those guns so our GIs on the beach wouldn't get slaughtered by all the, you know, all the 88s and everything. They're pummeling the beach. You know, the youngest kid on D-Day on one of those beaches was 14 years old. My great uncle was there, and he was on
his call.
Oh yeah, 14. His name was Virgil Mouse, and one of my great uncle hit Utah Beach. You know, and it's just and I've got his letters from, you know, both post and after D-Day, and it's really, you see the change in attitude, you see the change in mentality as they go through it, and speaking of letters. Well, as part of our presentation, as part of our STEM presentation, we bring all those resources into the school for the kids. We have a mobile museum that we have created. So, and when we present to the students, we let them touch history. There's a difference between seeing something behind glass in a museum. You walk past, you see, you touch. It's like, man, this is also my personal pet peeve too. I never like not being able to touch stuff. I'm ADHD that way. I just want to be able to hold it and touch it. Sometimes I feel a little bit more real with it. So my great uncle had a war chest. His name was Charles T. Harris, and we called him Uncle Chubbs. And he left it to my family. I begged and pleaded, and we sat down, we talked. They donated the chest to me, and now I put it on display for my students. You know, they want to see what his boots were like. They pick up everything is straight like it came off the battlefield. You know, obviously no weapons or anything are coming into the classroom, but it's all like his shirts, his jackets, his boots. You know, what type of winter gloves did he have?
Real
his,
stuff
you know,
on real people. Real stuff
on
these
absolutely.
Were real people. Yeah.
And it's you feel the connection.
Eye-opening.
He was a Bronze Star recipient
oh,
during the war. And I talked to our president, Bill Markham, quite often, and his wife, Val, and, you know, they are such great people, both military veterans, you know, proud veterans, and I was talking to, you know, Bill about, you know, how can I make this, you know, entertaining for the kids, and he told me a story about being in Normandy, you know, stepping on stuff that the Nazis had put there, you know, during the war, and the passion and the feeling. I was like, you know what, I feel that every day when I walk into the classroom and teach content to the kids, and that's where Discovery Education really, really helps me out, because digital resources are just massively everywhere. You know, ever since when COVID hit, it seems like everybody and their uncle had some type of digital platform for kids to use. And I'd actually been using United Streaming as an educator for a long time. They use their videos quite often. And our school adopted, we ran a pilot program with Discovery Education. And this is its third year in use. And, well, so none of us were ever trained to be, you know, online teachers. It was something that was kind of thrust upon us. And I found myself doing things like I created my own YouTube channel, you know, and everything else because I was desperate to find a way to stay in, you know, contact with my students. And when finally the kids came back into the classroom and I was like, I've got to bring my guys in after I got my wings and I went through jump school and I did everything. It was absolutely fantastic experience. I was like, now we got to do the next step. Now I've got to bring this into the classroom. And the program is that we started off, it's roughly a 2.5 to 3 hour kind of window. We start off with a 60 to 80 minute presentation. It goes through the history of D-Day.
What grade level are we talking about?
It's high school. It's 9-12. It's set. I've actually designed it because curriculum design is a background of mine. I actually designed it to be used for grades 9-12. I can adapt it to middle school if I like. I can also adapt it to any state in the country if I really need to. Because when you look at state content for World War II, it's roughly the same. History doesn't – it really doesn't – the facts don't change. The concept, it's still going to be June 6, 1944. It's still the Normandy invasion. It is still – you know, it's still Carentan, Eindhoven. You know, it's still Market Garden. Last time I checked, Market Garden's date hasn't changed or who was involved hasn't changed. You know, at least the veterans like Pee Wee Martin that I speak to, it hasn't changed for them. So it's really – I mean, that's the best part when I get to talk to those veterans. It's absolutely fabulous. And you bring this stuff in and you present it to them, and Discovery Ed has so many unique, like they have online investigations. And, you know, as we know as educators, we know we have students that might be struggling. Readers are, you know, sometimes they call them non-traditional students, whether they're struggling. I've never believed in a bad kid or, you know, whatever. I believe every kid can learn. I 100% truly believe that. I've always believed that. So Discovery Ed has readability functions with their software, so you could highlight text, and the text will read itself back to you. You can also adjust the Lexile level. That's been a big thing, you know, as far as making the text. Achieve 3000 does that really well. Man, that's another product we use. But Discovery Ed has the
They're good friends of mine, too.
Achieve 3000. Awesome. Yeah. And we use that program, we use Discovery Ed to sit there and enhance content. And how many books did you drag around with you in high school? I'm just kind of curious. How many books do you have with you?
I'm just curious. Hernia level.
You get scoliosis? Well, how about this? How about all you got to do is bring in a laptop that weighs maybe like 3-4 pounds. That's it.
Isn't that amazing? No pencil, no pen, no paper, no nothing
because – I chose to be completely green this year and 100% digital, and Discovery Ed allows me to do this. And our district uses Microsoft Teams. This is the beautiful part about Discovery Ed is that its connectivity with Microsoft Teams is extremely fluid. So in a Teams post for the week, like today since I'm here, I post my lessons plan for the entire week, and my students can see verbatim exactly what I want done. The link in Discovery Ed, the article that is there, they click on that, they go in, they read it, they do it, and they can digitally turn it into our online grade book, which is called Focus, which is absolutely great. So the first half of that lesson is going to be integrated. Discovery Ed also has a really unique program called the Studio. I can create a lesson within their studio, assign it to the kids, and it becomes an interactive presentation where they're going back and forth. So it's a live-action presentation, so I can collect real live data and disaggregate information as the lesson is going on to make sure I've got student mastery, I can move forward. And while we're doing this, I've got 7 to 8 jumpers in my – like we're all in our M42s that are in the room as we're going through with this. So the best part about this program is that I don't have to stop instruction. If they have a question and they want to ask one of my guys, I tell them to go ahead and ask. Please ask them, and they will go over and talk to them. And that way, instruction doesn't have to stop. You can keep fluidly moving. And sometimes I tell my guys, if you see something on the screen, pop in and ask, and they do it frequently. I don't mind that at all. I love sharing the stage. I think, you know, there's no more sage on a stage. That mentality is long gone.
Well, it's long gone.
You have to you know, you have to be inclusive with everybody and bring everybody into the fold. So we do that, and, you know, one of our jumpers saw a student ask a question. Is like, or I posted a question about, you know, D-Day tactics and strategy, what was the Allied invasion? A student posted a response up, and one of my jumpers just, boom, saw it. It's like, man, that's a real awesome response. You know, can I ask who responded to that? And the student raised, and, you know, that – students aren't used to, you know, and I shouldn't say not used, but, you know, they're, it's hard when they, being smart's almost like, you know, you don't want to seem like you're too smart in the classroom, you know what I mean? Because it's just like, yeah, you're a nerd or something like that. No, I totally dismantle that.
Yeah.
If you know it, say it. I don't care if you're wrong, at least you're talking. The silent classroom
does not
mean students are working.
That's
I'm a firm believer in that. If you know, if you ask me a question and you get it wrong, so what? I get stuff wrong all the time. This is the common joke I tell my students as I've been married. It's like, I'm only wrong when I go home, okay? It's like, I'm right in here from 7 o'clock to 2 o'clock. I'm right all the time, but I'm only wrong when I go home with my wife, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, and they love they get a kick out of that.
Yeah,
you know?
How long have you been teaching? How long have you been teaching, David?
This will be my 17th year now.
Wow, good for you, man. Good for you. You said something before, and I want to ask you something. You mentioned it, okay, the word STEM, okay, science, technology, engineering, math. And then a minute ago, you talked about, quote, the logistics of D-Day, okay? And when you wrote that, I wrote down as a quick note, interdisciplinary, okay? Because, you know, you're a history teacher, okay? But the logistics, okay, the thought process, okay, the logic, okay, behind it all, goes into everything, writing clearly, thinking through to a conclusion. It's math, it's science, if I may. You have to, you jump out of a plane, you better know which way the wind's going, all right? The breeze on the knees, if I may use your line, okay? Just talk, if you can, all right, about and talk about this within your school or however you're going to approach it, the interdisciplinary idea of all that you do, which I think is fascinating. At least it is to me.
So in Florida, we call it cross-curricular learning. So, you
there
know,
you
we're
go.
Really encouraged. You know, I'm not just a U.S. history teacher. I'm a reading teacher. I'm a science teacher. So anytime my background is, you know, reading is probably one of the biggest deficiencies that we see, and it's not just in Florida, it's in schools everywhere. Kids are more spending more time online than they are reading. They read the headlines, they don't read anything else. I teach readability. You know, I go over EOC style questions, and they're embedded in all my lessons that I do. My theory is, if you can't understand the question, how are you going to be able to pass the exam? And how are you going to be able to comprehend, say, you know, what presidents are saying, or, you know, General Omar Bradley, or, you know, Eisenhower? I have them read there's a card that Eisenhower sent to all the troops prior to D-Day. My great uncle put his in glass and encased it in glass. I let them read that. I have them read that. And I said, do you understand what this means to the guys that are about to go into combat? And you think about what that means and the energy that kind of comes over them when they see that. And then you talk about D-Day by the numbers. You know, I never thought – it's like, hey, you know, when I got there, it's like, hey, they're going to put the chute on me. You know, it's like, I don't have to – I've never had to think about math for a very long time.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, the classroom instruction that RCPT USA puts you through, you have to understand the physics of what that chute is going to do in the air. You know, if your lines, what we call getting twist, when you come out of the aircraft, if your lines twist, you have to be able to understand physically how to get yourself out, and you have to be able to understand, you know, how to turn yourself into the wind. We call it eating the carrot when you look at the windsock, and you want to be heading into the wind when you're coming down. So you can steer your canopy. But there's a lot of math, physics, there's a lot of science involved with it. So you have to understand the mechanics of what you're doing. And as you're going through our training course, you are learning all of this in detail and triplicate. And plus, RCPT USA, you better know how to take a written exam because they give you one at the end of training. And if you don't pass if it's like, I believe it's 90 or lower, you don't jump. They don't let you out. They will not let you out of the aircraft. And like I said, these strict training standards are what keep us safe and what keeps you safe. And you know the best part is, you know, my first day of jumping, and I watched, I believe it was like 22, 25 other guys go ahead of me. We were jumping out of a Cessna 152, so it can only hold like two jumpers at a time. And The best part when I got there first time through, and I always give credit to this individual, Ron Bell. And Ron was my jump buddy. And Ron had so many career jumps underneath him. I mean, this was like jumping out of airplane is nothing for him. It's just like we're walking down the street, you know, going to get a cup of coffee or something. That's what jumping was for Ron. And that's what it is for most of the guys on our team. But I was just like, oh, my God. I'm like,
sure, cool.
I was like, and he sat and he was with me the entire way. And at the end of that, so we started on Tuesday. My first jump was Wednesday. And I watched all these guys descend out of aircraft. I watched them all one after the other after the other. And my fears kind of drifted away. You know why? You know why my fears drifted away? The equipment works. It's always worked. It's never not worked. It's been working for over 74 years or 75 years. It was good enough in 1944. It is good enough today. And it is the same technique and manual. The only difference that RCPT does is we take the U.S. Army training manual, we take the U.S. Army off, we slap RCPT USA on there, and that is the same manual we use to train our jumpers with. Hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We're not reinventing the wheel, but we want to get everybody in the air and so they can feel the camaraderie. And the best part is when my students see that it's a family, it's a brotherhood and sister, because we have female jump masters as well. And
thank you for saying that.
We bring in everybody, you know, and Grunt Style, they're really awesome when they bring in their student jumpers. Last year at our Sand Snake operation, they brought in a 3 to 4 female jumpers, and it's so great to see that. It is so great because everybody can do it. You know, that's why I'm telling you, Larry, you got to come down and do a tandem.
President George H.W., remember when he turned 90, he did a jump.
Yep. Well, our World War II veterans, they are like Pee Wee Martin. He jumped with Art Schaefer in 2020.
How old
he jumped with him. And Pee Wee's 101 now, or he will be 101.
Oh.
He was 99 when he jumped with Art.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ah,
it's so
great,
you know. And Art Schaefer is such a legend in the airborne world, you know, when it comes to that, you know, he was over there at the 75th anniversary. He jumped with Tom Rice, another D-Day veteran, you know, and that's the other thing. Being on the team, I've got to meet so many amazing people, you know, and it's just contact all these individuals and talk to them and hear their stories. And, you know, this is the really cool part. So, you know, you ever seen the movie 12 Strong? You ever seen that about the horse soldiers?
What's it called?
You ever seen that film?
I don't know what it's called. No, I don't know that movie.
It's 12 Strong.
Sorry.
Right after 9/11, right after Al Qaeda took down the towers, we had a military unit that went straight into Afghanistan and went straight after the Taliban. And those guys, you're looking at Scotty Neal, Mark Nutch, and all those guys, and part of ODA 595. They're on our jump team. Those guys, then when they did their duty, they were fighting the Taliban on horseback using 19th century backpacks against 21st century technologies.
I remember seeing their stories. Okay, I didn't know there was a movie. I just looked here, by the way, if it's the same movie from 2018 with Michael Shannon, Chris Hemsworth, Michael Pena, Trevante Rhodes.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so I didn't know that movie existed. I'm embarrassed to say. Okay, but 12.
Oh, it's okay.
The number 12 Strong. Yeah.
And they've got
that was
in New York City.
And that is true. I mean,
there.
These guys went in before anything. Okay, and went in and tried to just amazing, just an amazing story.
And like
I never saw the movie, but I knew what happened. Yeah.
Like I'm talking to you now, I get to talk to guys like Billy Howell. I get to talk to guys, you know, that and they came back. And when they came back, they created a bourbon company, and they're another one of our sponsors.
That's
and what
great.
A great group. Oh, hey, it's okay.
I love it.
You know, like I said, building partnerships is what gets your name out there. It's what builds brand recognition. It's what brand recognition as far as a nonprofit for us, because at the end of the day, you know, our goal is to help veterans. You know, our goal is we're a nonprofit organization, which we honor the history and accomplishments of all the Allied paratroopers from World War II to present day. For us, we, you know, commemorating the past with supporting our veterans and our members makes us, and this is our line, this is what we say, makes us more than a jump, because it's exactly what we are. It's not, you don't just jump out of the airplane and that's it. You've now become part of a bigger family. You've become part of the airborne world. And you're airborne forever. That never changes. No one can take that from you. When you hit the ground that first day, that's you. You did that. No one can take that from you. That is all you. And that is the feeling every time, you know, it reinvigorates you. When I bring this to the classroom, nothing makes me prouder than to sit there and don that M42 and sit there and talk to my students and let them see it all. That's the passion. That's the fire that you got to bring into the room with them. And I've also talked to organizations like Airborne Special Operations Museum, National Infantry Museum, and I borrow information from – these are all the other resources. I have connections with the World War II Museum, and these are the foundational connections that I've been building. Oh, yes, yes, sir, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's great to be in contact with these people. And the really neat part is the second – so I gave the presentation in the fall, and I was like, something was missing. I was like, something was missing, okay? My ladies were missing. My Rosies were missing. And my African-Americans were missing from my presentation as well.
There you go.
So you know who the Tuskegee pilots are, right? You know who they are, correct?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Of course. One just died last week.
A better...
The oldest one just died last week. Yep.
Yep, General McGee. Here's a better question for you. Do you know who the Triple Nickels are?
No.
See, nobody does, and that's one of the things why I bring those.
Were they the black parachute? Were they the black paratroopers?
They were. They were the black infantry regiment that was created. Yep, and their job, their deployment. They were formed towards the end of the war. The training for them is going to be the same. They're all going to have, and there are videos out there, and I've incorporated them into my presentation. They actually became smoke jumpers. Those guys fight fires, fight forest fires from the air. If you go to the Forest Service. You go to their webpage, it's 75 years of history with the Triple Nickels, the 550th. And, you know, there's so much. Yeah, you know.
Google it here, everybody. U.S. Army Airborne Special Operations Museum, the history of the Triple Nickels. Unbelievable.
There you go. And they have a whole wall. So if you take their Matterport tour, they have an entire wall dedicated to these guys. And the thing is, it's just everybody served. It wasn't just, you know, this, that, and everybody served. It didn't matter where you came from or what you did. Everybody served because, you know, patriotism is not a bad word. It's not an evil, disgusting word. It is something that we believe, that I firmly believe in as an American citizen, that I believe in my country. I believe in respecting the office of the President of the United States, regardless of who's sitting in it. I tell my students that frequently. It's like, I don't care who's sitting in the chair, but you respect the position and respect what the government has to sit there and how it works. You know, because that's what makes our government strong, our country strong, and we move forward with that. And, you know, you don't present a biased perspective. You sit there and you give them both sides of the aisle and you let them make an informed decision.
Exactly.
You know, there's not a single trace of politics in my classroom. I've banned it all. I don't allow
Zach,
it in, and I
man.
Make sure it stays out. You
good
know,
man.
And
I
that
love
way,
it.
You know, well,
yeah,
that's
I love
the
it. We gotta
hang,
we gotta go in a couple of minutes here. I gotta tell you, Daniel, this was amazing. You
oh
are just
man,
something.
I'm sorry to hear that.
You are well, me too. We can do more. I'll bring you back on. I'll write you today.
Oh, hey, you know what? I would love to do so. You know what? Would be even better for you to broadcast down at Scott Apalaca, down at our airfield, to do a show down there with us. You know?
Well, I'm up
hey,
here in
not?
Maine, so I'm not gonna do that. But we can bring on other folks when you are on. So you're.
Absolutely.
Your vets, your students are welcome to come on. So let me get back to you a little bit later today, and I promise we'll continue this because you're right in line with what I love talking about, okay, which is history, education, social studies,
and
all that sort of stuff.
One last thing. Yeah. You mentioned bringing somebody on, and the person I'd really like to bring on and is the person who's he's responsible for me being where I am today, and that's our president, Bill Markham. You know, Bill has been a constant, steady force in my life since I've been on the team, and I would really love to bring him on, and he can really give you the full perspective of the team and what we've been doing as a community. I'd really like to be him to be on here with us and sit there and show you what the team really is all about. And one last thing I'll let you go. My next presentation, I mentioned the African-American paratroopers, but I got my Rosies too. My Rosies are coming in, and Bill's wife, Valerie, is going to be representing the female jumpers of D-Day. Women jumped in behind the lines 2 weeks prior to sit there and disrupt German communications. Oh, yeah, they were part of the British SOE, the Special Operations Executive, and they were trained assassins, and they were just trained well to sit there and disrupt comm lines, do everything they can to prevent to make it insane and nuts for the Germans when D-Day hit, and they did a great job of doing it. I'm portraying them, and the last part is I got one of our military liaison, our command sergeant major, Rick Lamb. He put me in contact with May Crier. May Crier is one of the last real Rosies that is out there. May has agreed to Zoom in to talk to my kids. I can't tell you how honored and thrilled I am, because when I teach World War I and World War II, I tell them all the time, you can have all the guns, bombs, tanks, and planes, and guys on the ground, but if you don't have the ladies back in the factories building all this stuff, how are you going to win the war?
Our
women logistically won World War, and that's where I bring math back in, and that's just, this is why it's STEM, because they have to understand the stuff doesn't just appear. Our Rosies in the factories are the ones putting this stuff together. My wife is even going to be part of the next presentation. She's going to portray the modern-day Rosie. And while I have May zooming in to talk to my kids and ask, and they get to ask her questions, and it is going to be a beautiful thing to have. And I am, and we do this next Friday, and I'm really, really pumped and excited for it.
I'm going to send you, an email in just a bit, probably about an hour from now,
sure.
And we're going to set up another show. Daniel, I'm running out of time, so I could talk to you forever about this and listen to you forever.
Well, we're
this
history
is just
teachers.
Great
that,
stuff.
That's what we're good at, right?
Yeah, you are good at it, man. I got to tell you. So let me go, but I promise you, I'm going to get back to you. Okay? Thanks, buddy.
Okay, absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you so
and
much.
And by the way, somebody just called in on the number. Probably you gave it to him. It's a 6047 number. I won't say any more than that if you can trace that person. I'm going to send you a link to the show. Okay? So that you'll be able to share the show with them. Okay? I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No problem, pal.
All right, good. Bye.
Bye, Daniel. Thank you. Bye.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. Okay, I got to go. I don't mean to cut Daniel off. He's incredible. All right, that's Daniel Tobias Flynn. He's a U.S. history teacher, department chair at Westside High School, Duval County Public Schools down in Jacksonville, Florida. Okay, and you can trace him there, and we'll bring him back on. This is just great stuff. I love it, being the old social studies teacher. We'll archive at ace-ed.org with a big thank you to Discovery Education. Thank you, Stephen. Take care, everybody.